Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the regular meeting of the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners. Audience members, I want to start by asking you to please silence your electronic devices. I would also like to remind you that in addition to the audience in this room, we have people watching and listening online. So please consider your language in comments and testimony today. Today's meeting is a hybrid board meeting. Some presenters and guests will appear in person and some will appear virtually. For those presenting virtually, please mute your mic when not speaking. And when presenting, please make sure to unmute your mic and turn on your camera. For those joining us in person to provide public testimony or present, please turn your mic on when you begin speaking so that the green light is showing, and off when you finish speaking so that the red light is showing again. For all presenters, please state your name for the record before speaking or responding to questions. I also wanted to say that we have the consent calendar, but we have a request to pull C6 from the consent calendar. So may I have a motion on the remaining items on the consent calendar?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, we have Commissioner Singleton move, Commissioner Moyer second. Approval of the consent calendar.
Now we'll move on. Oh, sorry. No. Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones? Oh, sorry. Chair Vega Peterson?
I believe Commissioner Jones-Dixon is virtual right now.
I don't see him virtual just yet.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Aye. The consent calendar is approved. I don't know if you actually technically asked for it, but there it is.
Opportunity for public comment on non-agenda matters. This is a time for the board to hear public testimony, not for board deliberation. When it is your turn to speak, I'll call your name and unmute you or call you to the presenter's table. I'll set a timer for 3 minutes when you begin speaking and announce when your time is up, at which point, please wrap up your sentence. Chair, we have 6 people signed up for verbal testimony. I'll call 4 people at a time. Please come forward to the presenter table when your name's called. Yasmin Ibarra, Nora Gorby, Aiden Gerd, and Sierra Carlson.
Good morning. You can go ahead and begin.
Good morning, Chair Vega Peterson, County Commissioners. My name is Yasmin Ibarra. I'm the political director for SEIU Local 49. Our union represents over 14,000 essential healthcare and property service workers, including the janitors with Relay and ABM here at the county, and the newly organized security officers with Intercon. Intercon officers are now bargaining their first contract, seeking livable wages, affordable healthcare, and adequate PTO. We are here to urge the county to support these goals by investing and funding a fair contract. Union contractors offer fair wages, affordable health care, and paid time off, leading to higher retention rates, worker retention than their non-union counterpart. In contrast, the non-union contractors that offer low wages and benefits could potentially expose the county buildings to inconsistent cleaning, and diminished security due to higher rates of turnover. What's worse, the lower wages and insufficient benefits provided by non-union contractors can place further strain on the economy and the county's resources by fostering greater dependence on public-funded social services. We're here to urge you to add sufficient funding to the Intercon contract in your proposed budget to support much-needed wage and benefit improvements. We understand that the county is facing budget shortfalls. Still, SEIU represented janitors and security officers remain committed to delivering high-quality services despite these challenges. As you work to approve the budget that balances Multnomah's diverse needs, we urge you to ensure sufficient funding to continue investing in these essential subcontracted union workers. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Chair Vega Peterson and commissioners, my name is Nora Gorby and I am an Intercon security officer at County's Central Library. I'm here today to ask this commission to invest in your subcontracted workers by ensuring there is sufficient funding for the Intercon contract to provide officers with living wages and affordable benefits. I earn $24.25 an hour, and despite this, it is impossible for me to put any money towards savings. I get my health care through Intercon. I chose the plan with the lowest deductible with the idea that I could pay it sooner and be able to use my health insurance for what it's for. After all the deductions, I'm paying upwards of $400 a month, matching my monthly taxes. Because of this, it is a monthly stressor deciding between paying utility bills or buying groceries for my family. And even with this premium, I'm still left paying nearly $300 out of pocket for a recent trip to the dentist, as well as copays for my prescriptions. Many of my coworkers who can't afford Intercon's healthcare plan frequently opt not to go to the doctor at all, ultimately forcing them to use their extremely limited paid time off, getting only 1 hour for every 40 hours worked to recover without care. I used to work for a union security contractor, and our healthcare was not only far more affordable, but it provided higher quality care. That's one of the biggest reasons why my coworkers and I came together to form our union. Intercon security officers work hard in extremely challenging conditions, but we are proud of the important work that we do for the county. We hope this county will invest in us by funding our contract to include fair wages and benefits. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Chair Vega Peterson and commissioners, my name is Aiden Gerd. I've worked at the county's Walnut Park complex as a security officer since September of 2023. First under Northwest Enforcement and now under Intercon. I am currently covered under my parents' health insurance plan until I turn 25, but I frequently worry about covering the very sizable monthly cost I will be responsible for when I am no longer eligible for my current plan. If I choose to opt for Intercon's health care, I hear my fellow officers speak about how unaffordable Intercon's health insurance plan is for them, and as a result, I'm not even considering it as an option. I personally don't understand why we as vital workers don't have the same access to affordable health care as county staff. In addition to the inadequacy of our health care, our access to paid time off, used to spend time with and care for our families, or our own well-being is currently very minimal. We accrue only 40 hours of PTO, which is bundled with our sick time yearly. I have found myself in situations where I had to choose between my own health and seeing my family. For all the service and protection we provide for the county, we deserve so much more. Prior to my station under the county's contract, I served as a security officer for corporate property management. The day-to-day effort that the county requires of us demands heart, extra care, and compassion for people that can at times pose a health and safety risk to ourselves. It's not only a skill to be mastered, but a means to survive our shifts. I've known officers who have been physically assaulted. I've had people threaten to kill me. I've known so many others who can say the same. The risk for us is always high. I am proud of the work that I do for the county, but I can speak for every officer under this contract when I say we need better. I hope the commission here today will do us all the service of adding sufficient funds to our contract. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone, again. My name is Sierra Carlson. I'm a full-time case manager at Metropolitan Public Defender and a resident of District 2. I ask you to please keep program 25131B funded. And with his permission, I'd like to share a personal testimony of one of my clients. I'm 45 years old and have unfortunately been in the adult Oregon judicial system since I was 15, when I was sentenced to 13 years in prison under the newly enacted Measure 11 law. Prior to that, I spent significant time in and out of the juvenile system. And since then, I've been to prison twice more. Being institutionalized has been a huge hurdle and hard stumbling block to get over, enhanced and further complicated by an adoptive drug habit and all the mental byproducts that accompany that. What has been crucial for me and many people I know has been the transition process from jail and prison back into the community. Historically, the process was left to a PO to assist with, and given their case size and primary role as sort of a police officer, that help was nearly non-existent or muffled by their desire to monitor and regulate behavior. Honestly, I haven't seen or experienced that help offered or job taken seriously until recently. I am currently no longer under any form of supervision, the first time since I was 14. This was huge and scary because I thought I would lose the help I so desperately needed. Since working with Sierra, she has helped me in so many ways, a lot of which I would not have been able to do independently. Since being her client, she has managed to secure me housing that I desperately needed, taken me out of a tent on the streets and out of survival mode mentality that compels petty crime. She got me into a substance use program that I couldn't independently secure and connected me with a peer support specialist who understands me and my struggles. Food stamps, a cell phone, bus tickets, a hot meal, prescriptions filled. These are things I should know how to do, but after 23 years in prison, I just don't. I have called Sierra about all these things, and she was able to make them happen. But above all, resources and tools are essential, but the secret sauce to our working relationship, whether she knows it or not, is the trust I have in her. She makes me want to do better and get my life on track and makes me believe that I can. A lot of us don't have a support network who believe in us and are non-judgmental while still advocating in our favor. Sierra will meet you halfway, all the way. She once walked blocks and blocks from her office and walked me to the DMV, grabbed me a ticket, and said, "The rest is on you. I gotta go." I would not have gone on without her doing that. She knows I love and want to do music. She saw I was nervous and fidgety in trial once, so she asked me to write down my top 20 rappers just to calm me, and it worked. These things go beyond resources and referrals. A lot of us are broken, jaded, skeptical, and untrusting of any employee of the system. I'm one of them. But their main resource is authentic human acceptance and interaction and support, and it works. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Next, checking for Rebecca Menda and Sharon Myron. Okay, checking for Addie Smith. And then we have injured and pissed off. Let me get you a microphone.
Good morning.
Morning. 2 weeks ago, I handed in my keys and fob to my apartment that had the mailbox to the board clerk. And this week, my name's injured and pissed off. If you look it up on Google, it's the first four links on Google at the top. And I had nothing to do with it other than if Google wants to put more up there, well, they certainly can. I find it hard to believe that they'd only find four things to say at the top of the list. Here's some papers that I took photographs for, and the security said that when I leave papers, not to hand them in to the clerk, to just put them here on the table, so I'll do that. There's a number of things. Scandal and SBS, everybody knows what Scandal is, like Neil Goldsmith and Jeff Coogan. And that OHSU hospital, apparently they have scandals all the time, the city, county, and state, apparently. And I find it hard to believe that you can go to a hospital, and I'm here at an aggressive care facility currently, which I've left a phone number for. The president, the big shot there, said that I was only there for my hip. The OHSU doesn't want the spinal cord injuries sent, so I guess I was wrong. I want to quote myself, where I said that X-ray bones and x-rays don't lie, doctors prevaricate. Well, bones and x-rays do lie in the trash, and apparently they're not retrievable or anything. I've gotten no justice at all. Well, I did get my $7,000 after complaining to this board with the Portland Police Internal Affairs, putting in complaints about stolen property and things not missing. They've taken everything out of my apartment. I thought there were laws against search and seizure of the county, and they've taken everything. I couldn't remove my hospital bed. I guess they needed it more than I do. I don't even know that I can lay on a common bed because I, with the spinal cord injuries and the twisting and things that they did to my back, that I don't think I can lay flat on a floor or anything like that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Checking again for Rebecca Menda, Sharon Myron, or Addie Smith. That's all the public testimony this morning.
All right. Thank you so much. I just want to, so we will be doing the consent agenda item that was removed, but I know Health Department is working to get the right people online to answer questions about that. So we're going to do that as soon as we get word from HD that they've got the right folks. So Marina.
You want me to state what the nature of my question is, so sure. that'd be helpful for them.
Yeah.
Who it is. So it's just there's a statement in this. It's an appropriation. Is a statement that we may expend the money to start the planning and implementation. However, it says the IGA may be terminated if we can no longer proceed with the planning. And so my question is, are we going to go ahead and spend the money even if at the very outset we think we may not move ahead? So again, if there's nothing, I don't have any issue with the program, but I'm just curious about the way it's worded because it looks like we may spend money on something that we're just going to terminate. And so maybe it's the likelihood of that happening.
Sure. Okay, so we'll get clarity, and Adele's here, and she's bringing the right press. So
it has nothing to do with the substance of what it is, just whether.
All right. Great. Thank you for sharing that. All right. So we can move on to R1. Before we do that, I was going to invite Chris Neal down to, since we're doing a lot of budget modifications, and there's been a lot of chatting or a lot of conversation at the board level about budget modifications, I wanted to give Chris a chance to address that.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Christopher Neal, COO, Multnomah County. A few sessions ago down here, we got caught speeding on the timeliness of bud mods, and that doesn't work. So, and it makes the process seem performative, and that too doesn't work. So the chair and I heard you 100%, and within a few hours of that discussion, I sent out direction to the entire county that we need to shore that up and that we need to stop doing that. All of your chiefs of staff were also copied on that, and I already know that some of you have seen that message that went out within hours of that discussion. So we have made a commitment to shore that up and to follow the process as we should. I'll also tell you that the deputies had very, let's say, intimate conversations with their departments even further than what you all read in that email. So that's what we've done about it thus far, and we're making a commitment to be better about that because the process shouldn't be performative. The second thing, though, I'll say is that email doesn't retro back work that's already been happening. So there will be more bud mods that will come through that we might have been speeding on, and I wanted to make that clear and be honest about that and upfront so that you all know. But like I said, the direction is out there. The deputies have had conversations with each and every one of the departments going forward, and I expect that we'll be better about it. I just wanted to come up here, the chair and I, to let you all know and confirm that you all have been heard and we've taken action. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Really appreciate that and your commitment in getting on this. It's been great working with you on this, so thank you.
All right. Can I, before you...
Chris.
Sorry. This isn't a question, but this was an issue that came up in my second board meeting 2 years ago. So I'm really appreciative of the steps that you took to address it. So thank you. And I know it's a cultural shift and a work shift for many in the county. And I'm really appreciative that it's happening because the commission's work should never be performative. And I guess one of the things that, so I hear you saying that there may be more coming, but that's sort of the tale of that was already in the pipeline. It would be really useful at the start of the new fiscal year to, like, what is the new process so we don't get into the spring season again? So I just want to understand, like, so what does that mean? And from the commission standpoint, you know, will we need to flex or should we flex in some way that's different versus like will we do them quarterly or just what the process might be? So again, appreciate that we're going to have some flow through, but would love to start the new year in a way in which we know what the new process is.
Yeah, I will come back and we'll commit to talking through what that process is before the first of the year.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Great. Marina, can we move on to R1?
R1, budget modification DCS 00625, increasing Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriations Act by $1,643,500.
May I have a motion?
Second.
Commissioner Graham Edwards moves. Commissioner Singleton seconds. Approval of R1. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Chair Vega Peterson, commissioners. My name is John Hendrickson. I'm the director of the Transportation Division in the Department of Community Services, and I'm here with...
My name is Britta Shinsky. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm the finance manager of the Department of Community Services. Sorry. Thank you.
We're here today to request an action by the board that will allow the emergency work that we had to do on the Stark Street Bridge to be paid for with funds from the transportation received from the Coronavirus Response and Relief Supplemental Appropriations Act, or CRISA as we call it. As you know, the northwest side of the Stark Street Bridge broach collapsed in September of 2024. Because this was an emergency and we wanted to limit the closure to the bridge that the community had to endure, shortly after we discovered the damage, we requested an emergency declaration from the chair that allowed us to directly hire a contractor to do the repairs. We selected Goodfellow Brothers as a contractor and David Evans and Associates as the designer, and paid for the work using our road fund and transportation that is made up of the state highway fund and our local gas tax. We ran the job like a CMGC project, using the contractor's expertise to help develop the design and ensure that the design was buildable and efficient. We consulted as a group with ODOT and the various regulatory agencies, including the Gorge Commission, the State Historic Preservation Office, the Department of Environmental Quality, and others to get permission and buy-in on the repairs and our construction methods. We began construction in November and reopened the bridge in March. In 2021, the Transportation Division was allotted the CRISA funds that we are requesting the emergency work be charged against. This federal funding was unique to transportation and limited to only be spent on transportation-related expenses. These funds are segregated in transportation from other funds and must be expended by September of 2029. Approving this action before the board will allow us to spend down our CRISA funds and reserve our road fund dollars for other transportation uses. That's all I have, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you so much. Marina, did we have any public testimony on this item?
No, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions for John or Britta? Well, please go ahead.
As always, thank you. The corporate community and the community out there, they're extremely appreciative, and the fact that it was on time and on budget is a big deal. So thank you again for your leadership.
Happy to do it. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you. And I just think this is a great example of you and your team really kicking into gear to recognize that this is a critical, road for the community, and getting it up and running again as much as possible was really incredible work. So thank you for that. All right, Marina, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye. The budget modification is approved.
Thank you.
R2, budget modification HD01125, appropriate $964,760 of Clackamas County and Washington County Crisis Line Services.
May I have a motion? Commissioner Jones-Dixon moves. Commissioner Brim Edwards seconds. Approval of R2. Good morning, Brady.
Good morning, Chair, and good morning, Commissioners. My name is Brady Estevez. I use he, him, his pronouns. I'm the finance manager for Behavioral Health and Corrections Health. Thank you for the opportunity to present this budget modification request. Next slide, please. Today, I'll be outlining a proposed allocation of $964,000 in funding from Clackamas and Washington County to enhance the operations of our Behavioral Health Call Center. The total appropriation includes $704,000 from Clackamas County and $260,000 from Washington County. These contributions are ongoing and reflect each county's commitment to supporting behavioral health services for our community. These funds will directly address increased demand and critical staffing needs at the Behavioral Health Call Center. The Clackamas County funding, the $704,000, will support the creation of four new positions, three of those being mental health consultants to respond to increased call volume and provide clinical expertise during crisis interventions. One behavioral health supervisor to ensure proper oversight, staff support, and quality assurance within the call center operations. This investment will help maintain timely, professional, and effective responses to mental health calls. The Washington County contribution of $260,000 will fund two new temporary staff. These positions will provide additional capacity to manage the growing volume of service requests and ensure continued access to behavioral health support. Next slide, please. This budget modification enables us to improve call response times and service quality, reduce pressure on existing staff, increase availability of trained professionals to assist individuals in crisis, build a more robust and responsive behavioral health infrastructure across both counties. That is all that I have for this budget modification. Any questions?
Thank you so much. Myrna, did we have any public testimony on this?
No, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions on this budget modification? Okay, thank you. Commissioner Singleton.
I just have a question about the Washington County piece, because it says the contract expires June 25, mm-hmm. and then I didn't track that it was two staff. I know we're expecting an extension. I'm just wondering what the timing of that is. It seems hard to hire two new staff for a month.
No, so it's an existing contract that we've had with Washington County. It's been ongoing for several years. We expect it to continue. And the $260,000 is additional of our existing contract already.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you, Commissioner Bremenders.
My question was, is this full cost recovery? The amount of resources we're getting from the other two counties for the services we're providing?
What do you mean? Can you maybe expand on that?
That if we're providing services and they're providing a grant, is it completely covering the costs of the services we're providing for them?
Yeah.
He's funny a friend.
I just asked the question because I would hope so.
Good morning.
Yeah, and good morning. Barb Snow, Senior Manager of Safety Net Services. We are regularly working with both Washington and Clackamas County using staffing software and modeling to try to ensure that we are getting full cost reimbursement, that what they're paying for is covering the amount of calls and the work that we put in for both those lines.
So I guess that is, we're trying, do we have like previous data that would show what full cost recovery would look like?
Yes, we have used that so Clackamas County, I feel confident that we're getting full cost recovery from them. Washington County has been ongoing negotiations between us to try to ensure that we are getting what we need from them to do the work that we're doing.
Okay. Thank you. I would hope that anytime we're providing services, we're getting full cost recovery, and that would be our goal. And if we're not, that would be indicated, just so we know that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I don't see any other questions, so thank you both very much. Marina, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Aye.
Commissioner Brim Edwards? Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye. The budget modification is approved.
R3, budget modification HD01225, appropriate $470,000 mental health service element 24 commitment services.
Can I have a motion? double trouble over. Commissioner Jones-Dixon moves. Commissioner Brim Edwards seconds. Approval of R3. Hello again, Brady.
So this next budget modification, which focuses on strengthening our involuntary civil commitment services with the support of additional state funding. Next slide, please. This modification reflects our ongoing commitment to meeting new state requirements and improving outcomes for individuals at risk of entering the criminal justice system. We are receiving $470,000 in ongoing funding from the Oregon Health Authority, or OHA. This funding supports expanded capacity and aligns with OHA's updated expectations for data reporting and diversion strategies. The goal of the funding is to expand and improve our civil commitment services, ensure compliance with new OHA data reporting requirements, enhance efforts to divert individuals from criminal justice systems into appropriate behavioral health care. This modification will appropriate will fund two new positions, one behavioral health manager to oversee and coordinate involuntary commitment processes, ensure compliance with state guidelines, and strengthen partnerships across systems. It will also fund one program specialist to support both pre- and post-commitment phases, ensure accurate data collection and reporting, and evaluate program outcomes. Next slide, please. This investment enables us to ensure consistent and high-quality service delivery during involuntary commitment processes, improves tracking and accountability of individuals served through the system. It strengthens our ability to divert individuals away from incarceration and toward treatment, and meets the state's growing expectations for transparency and outcome-driven service delivery. It puts us in a position to deliver more effective care, meet state mandates, and better serve vulnerable individuals in our community. That's it for my presentation. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Brady. I really appreciate that. Marina, any public testimony on this item?
No, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any questions for Brady? Commissioner Moyer.
You're probably not the right one to answer these, though. I don't know if there's a program person. Related to the incredibly generous amount of money that the health authority is providing us to do this work, how many individuals go through at least the initial 72-hour hold and a recommendation for civil commitment is made each year?
I brought some reinforcement, so maybe Jay can help me.
He's ready.
Good day, Chair. Good day, Commissioners. Jay Alsander, Interim Deputy Director of Behavioral Health Division. In calendar year 2024, we had 2,303 investigations that came to us. Of those, 1,824 were filed, meaning they made it through those 3 days. And then of those, 408 became 14-day diversions, which is 22%. 153 were hearings, which is 8.4% of those filed. And 135 commitments for that year, which is 7.4% of those filed.
But each step of that process, we start with that larger 2,000 number, requires us in some way to be involved, either through doing the evaluation, or we currently use our district attorney's office to do the legal work. And then, so we have potentially, I'm assuming they want us to serve the diversion population too, or no, just the 130? In the pre- and post-civil commitment process for this $470,000, it would include those who opt and are offered a 14-day diversion?
That is correct. And also, it includes the 180 commitments that were monitored, as well as 75 trial visits, which is someone who is in the community under commitment who are monitored by our team.
So it's a population around 600-ish, if you add it together?
There's some overlap, but yes.
Okay. I bring this up not because I have any criticism for you. I just continue to be incredibly frustrated with the Oregon Health Authority when it comes to giving counties the appropriate level of financial support to serve this incredibly vulnerable population. I think, you know, there's a lot of conversation about what the standard should or shouldn't be for a civil commitment, but what people often miss, and I why I am so critical of $470,000 is a civil commitment only becomes beneficial beyond a short term if we can keep people well. Otherwise, sadly, we have a significant number of individuals who decompensate and return to a mental health crisis. And a civil commitment in Oregon, if it were to be the full 180 days under statute, costs an average of $321,000 per civil commitment. Total state dollars. Federal government won't pay for this. So I am just incredibly frustrated that the Oregon Health Authority is providing such inadequate funding to actually make that treatment have long-term benefit for that individual in that community. So obviously, I'm glad that we're getting funds. I'm happy to have any degree of increased resources, but I'm pointing out how woefully underfunded and how financially backwards the Oregon Health Authority's approach is to people who are experiencing mental health crisis, and how nearly impossible it is for our staff to truly provide pre and post commitment services at a beneficial level for the amount of funding that we're being provided. So that, thank you. You guys do important work. I'm just frustrated that you're not adequately supported.
Can I build off of that?
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner Jones Sixon.
Can we just ask them can we share that to OHA or write a letter or us as a board to see how we can, what are the next steps to get additional funding? What can we do? I don't have any questions for you, supportive, but.
Yeah, I think we can talk to, we can see where we can push on, what levers we have to push and how we can do this. I appreciate Commissioner Moyer's continued advocacy on this issue. I read a lot of sarcasm in her first line of this statement. So I wanted to. And I think we can talk with Stacey Cohen from Government Relations on the best way that this board can get involved in this. But I think it's been an ongoing and really impactful issue for Multnomah County and our, and our partners in the lack of investment for OHA and funding a basic system that we are continually, we are being asked to support, and we do support to the best of our ability. So thank you. All right. Any other questions or comments? Thank you. Marina, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Aye.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Jones Dixon?
Yes, and let's ask for more funding.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Yes, the budget modification is approved. All right, thank you, Brady.
Thank you.
R4, budget modification HD032, funding for La Clinica project completion.
May I have a motion? Commissioner Brim Edwards moves, Commissioner Singleton seconds, approval of R4. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair and Commissioners. For the record, my name is Anirudh, he, him pronouns, Interim Executive Director for the Health Center. We are here today to talk about the La Clinica project completion and funding. With me, I have...
Good morning. My name is Adrian Daniels. I'm the Strategy and Policy Director for the Community Health Center.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, good morning. My name is Hassan Bader. I am the finance manager for the Integrated Clinical Services.
Good morning. I think there's a slide presentation.
There is.
Thank you, Marina.
Good morning. If we could advance the slide, I want to give just a brief history of where we're at. So the request today is to complete an appropriation action of $6 million of beginning working capital, which completes the construction and relocation actions of our new Fernhill Health Center. This project has been a multi-year project, which has allowed us to triple the size of the La Clinica de Buena Salud location and fully offer full primary care, integrated behavioral health, on-site pharmacy, and on-site dental hygiene services. It's located at the Portland Community College Opportunity Center at Northeast 42nd Avenue in the Coley and Concordia neighborhoods. The clinic recently opened on May 20th and is fully operational. move to the next slide, please. Program has worked for the past 2 years extensively with local neighborhood organizations, patients, and staff on the design and offerings at this clinic. In the past year, we've been engaged at over 20 different events and outreach opportunities, making sure that we have the design and opening communication correct. I do want to briefly explain that this is an unusual appropriation for us. It is a client-funded project, and so funding comes from the beginning working capital of the Community Health Center Fund. As such, invoices for this project for construction would go through the Department of County Assets, who did the original budgeting, and then we would directly reimburse the Department of County Assets as construction was completed. And that's why you're seeing such an unusually late appropriation here today. Happy to take questions.
Thank you so much. Marina, did we have any public testimony on this item?
No, Chair.
Okay, any questions on this? Thank you, Commissioner Singleton.
Thank you all. I just wanted to share a little bit because we're very excited for the grand opening tomorrow. And just kind of name that my predecessor, Commissioner Sushila Jayapal, had many conversations with PCC leadership and thinking about the vision for this opportunity center and working with you all to really bring this to fruition where we could partner healthcare with access to other social services, as well as opportunities for workforce development for students at PCC. So I'm just thrilled of all the work that's been done. I'm really excited to see the space tomorrow, and we couldn't be happier to have this awesome health clinic in District 2. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any other questions or comments? All right, thank you all. I second that. I'm looking forward to being there for the opening tomorrow. And just wanna, I know all of you have been involved in this project for years, and it's gonna be exciting to have this open for the community. So thank you. All right, Marina, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Muir?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Aye.
Commissioner Boehm Edwards? Commissioner Jones Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye, the budget modification is approved.
R5 budget modification, JOHS 00825, 30202 rebalance OTO Metro SHS carryover for city by $11,200,000.
May I have a motion? Commissioner Singleton moves. Commissioner Jones Dixon seconds. Approval of R. I was like, where are we? R5. Thank you so much. Welcome, Antoinette and Dan.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the board. For the record, my name is Antoinette Payne. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm the finance manager senior for the Joint Office of Homeless Services. If we can go to the next slide, please, that'd be great. So this request is a technical budget modification, reappropriating funds from the previous fiscal year, FY24. A little background, in FY24, the board approved $16 million in unanticipated revenue, one time only, from SHS, Supportive Housing Services, to be allocated to the City of Portland, specifically for temporary alternative shelter sites. The Joint Office paid the City of Portland $16 million in advance in FY24. By the end of 24, the City of Portland had about $14.6 million remaining unspent, and the city currently has those funds. As you recall, this amount that is always footnoted when I discuss SHS carryover in 25. So the City of Portland plans to spend the remaining funds for TAS operations, with 11.2 to be spent this fiscal year and 3.4 million in FY26. The 3.4 million for FY26 will be allocated through a department amendment during the budget process. The breakdown of planned spending is 1.4 million they spent last year, 11.2 this year, and 3.4 million in FY26, totally 16 million as tabled and is displayed in this table. If we can go to the next slide. This budget modification seeks approval to increase the budget appropriation in Supportive Housing Fund by 11.2 million to align the budget with the planned FY25 spending of the reappropriated SHS funds. And that's all I have on this bud mod.
Thank you so much. Did we have any public testimony on this item?
No, Chair.
All right, do we have any questions on this budget modification? Thank you, Commissioner Singleton.
Thank you. I shared with Antoinette and Dan ahead of time as well, so I wanted to bring it into this conversation. But I had asked a couple of questions. One is, what is the county investments that we passed or will pass to the City of Portland for FY25 and for which activities. I'm looking for that disaggregated by fund type. So if it's our general fund, it's state money, or it's federal like ARPA. And this is for both Bud Mod, so I won't ask twice, I promise. The next was, what is the county investments disaggregated by fund type that we propose to pass to the City of Portland in FY26 and for which activities? And I'm just trying to get an understanding globally of some of the money that gets kind of passed back and forth between the two jurisdictions as we continue to kind of work through our budget process.
Okay. So for 25, in our adopted budget, we have about $7.4 million that is coming, being passed through from the state to the city, and that's for Clinton Triangle. And then if this BUDMA passes today, about $11.2 million for the other task sites. And then our goal is to get the $15 million out the door this fiscal year, that Metro, the Metro admin dollars. And so if those three actions occur, the total for FY25 is about $33.6 million. And then 26, in the chair's proposed budget, we have County SHS, which is what I'm going to refer to, $200,000 for Portland Housing Bureau staffing. My understanding that helps with PSH coordination. And then $10 million of County General Fund, one time only, and that's for alternative shelter sites. And then we have about $13.4 million coming from the state that's going to be passed through to their emergency shelters, so their alternative or shelter sites. That's around $23.6 million, and that's in the chair's proposed. And then we plan to bring forward an amendment about $3.4 million of County SHS for the task sites, and that will bring the total to almost about $27 million. And then there's that potential of state funding, about $11 million, if that comes through.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for Antoinette or Dan? Great. Thank you both very much. Marina, can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Yes.
Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Yes.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye. The budget modification is approved.
R6, budget modification JOHS 01025-30905, reduced city ARPA by $5,147,256 and rebalance to SB 1530.
May I have a motion? Commissioner Jones-Dixon moves. Commissioner Brim Edwards seconds. Approval of R6. Welcome back.
Thank you. So Antoinette Payne, she, her pronouns, finance manager senior at the Joint Office of Homeless Services. If we can go to the next slide. This one really is just a funding swap. So just kind of give you a little background. The modification addresses adjustments related to the use of state funds through Senate Bill 1530. Funds for Safe Rest Village, for the city. Also, this modification replaces funding from the American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA, to state through Senate Bill 1530 funds. So in November 2024, the board approved the use of these funds through Senate Bill 1530. Half of these funds were for the city, for Safe Rest Villages, and were originally intended to pass through to the county and give the city and give to the city. The county will retain the state funds on behalf of the city to fund the SRVs this fiscal year. The city wants to swap ARPA for Senate Bill 1530 funds. As a result, the county will retain $6.5 million in state funding to fund SRVs, bringing the total FY25 SRV budget to $15 million, a 1.3 increase from the adopted budget, which was $13.7 million. And just to note, in our FY25 adopted budget, SRVs were initially funded using city ARPA funds. Because the county is keeping the state funds, the City of Portland will now decrease the ARPA funding provided to the county by $5.1 million. If we can go to the next slide, please. So with this request, we are requesting approval to decrease the budget appropriation in the COVID-19 response fund by $5.1 million. This decrease reflects the replacement of city ARPA funding with Senate Bill 1530 funds for the SRVs this fiscal year. And I think that's all I have on this one.
Okay, thank you. Did we have any public testimony on this item?
No, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Moyer.
Okay, I'm trying to wrap my head around the back and forth and where this puts us as a whole. Do these two budget modifications, are they already reflected in the budget presentation that the Office of Homeless Services provided earlier, a couple weeks ago?
For 26?
Yes.
No.
What does this do to FY25 related to that modified budget?
So for FY25, this will just decrease the amount of ARPA that we will have, and just we're essentially asking to use Senate Bill 1530 to fund those SRVs instead. So you're just swapping funding.
Okay, but if we did not take this action, which I'm not saying we shouldn't take this action, but I'm just trying to understand. So we're moving a different funding stream from the city or from the state that is coming to us?
Good morning, I'm Dan Field. I'm the Homeless Services Department Director. I use he, him pronouns. So the First Amendment was no impact on our budget. That was money we had already planned that the city would spend. We're just allowing them to spend it over 3 years instead of two.
Okay.
So that, I think we're, you referenced that, so I wanted to address that even though we're past that budget amendment. For this one, it's a straight swap, and it is confusing, and I think this is just trying to take a step out of the many steps that we have where we take money from the state, give it to the city, and what the city essentially said is, why don't you keep that money from the state, and we will correspondingly give you less money. And so it's a net zero impact on us, and it's hopefully eliminating one of those steps where we're
and was it always the intention to pass through the money from the state to the city?
It was
okay. I'm just trying to get what's it takes. And last question and then I'm done. In our back and forth money swap, I have heard a lot of like different things about we were supposed to give the city X amount of money. They were supposed to give us a certain amount of money as a net. Nets when you do the puts and takes, right? Clearly was not an accounting major. How much are we this year giving to the city? Is it a net positive, a net negative for homeless services, shelter, navigation services? I'm trying to understand like where we are at in all of this.
If we get the $15 million out the door, we're probably in the neighborhood of the same, going back and forth.
Okay.
So the net, the total for 25, these are the numbers that Antoinette just went through in response to Commissioner Singleton's question, and we certainly have this and can share this with you. We have the FY25 total. I won't run through those again, but it's $33.6 million, and that's comprised of the Metro $15 million that Antoinette just mentioned and some task site funding from SHS. This budget amendment we're talking about now doesn't change the net there. It just changes how the money flows. Okay. The money we were going to give to the city was state money. So it was a pass-through. And we're no longer passing that through.
Okay. I'm just trying to track it. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
No,
and I think questions. It's really...
It is a very good question. And I think in the budgeting process that we'll dive back into with you all in our department next week, that's probably a good place to start to understand that flow of money because it does have implications downstream multi-year. It is changing the nature of the financial exchange between the city and the county, and I think we need to pay attention to that.
Other questions? Any other questions? Okay, great. We did have one public testimony for the item, so I want to make sure that we do hear that. Marina?
Jen Snutson.
It's actually Jens Knutson. I apologize in advance. I might need just slightly longer than 3 minutes. I also apologize because I actually meant to testify on R5 instead of R6, but it's still somewhat relevant because I know that we are, or if I understood that correctly, we are decreasing some of our funding to Safe Rest Villages, which I do think provide a very valuable and cost-effective solution relative to some of the spending that is currently coming out of the joint office for many of our programs. The one thing I wanted to highlight today is that our outcomes are not what they seem when it comes to the data reporting coming from Joe's. Roughly 4 in 7 of the clients that I have data visibility on, as directed by the county to enter data this way, we have it as a client refuses to answer when we are unable to contact a client for follow-up data after providing any amount of rent assistance. So this essentially means that we provide rent assistance for, 3 months, 2 years, whatever it is, and we check in 3, 6, and 12 months later. But when we check in, if we don't get a hold of the client because we've stopped services with them, and we call their property manager and they're not there, we just say we can't contact them. That means they're probably out of housing. That means it's probably a failed metric, but that, from my understanding, does not get reported accurately. Circling back to a program that was authorized by this body, or at least one member on this body, the Housing Multnomah Now program, I can tell you working with that program that the outcomes are no better and possibly worse at this current time. And that program is sunsetting only 2 years later. It has had, as far as I can tell, not a single audit, financial or case files, and it is in total shambles as far as what is coming out of it. And it is because of failed county leadership to require certain aspects of the program be monitored and be dealt with upfront. It was serving a very difficult clientele with a specific political purpose to move people out of downtown specifically, but only providing a 2-year rental assistance agreement, even though these people were chronically homeless, according to the HUD standards that we typically work with, and even our own county expectations for coordinated access. These folks would typically need longer terms of assistance in order to become stable. We knew that going in, and we did it anyways. And as such, we are seeing these people now exit back into the streets either early or at the end of their grant, because they are not sustainable in the housing that they're in, and we cannot provide sufficient supportive services in the time frame that we have to work with these clients. And because of its rushed implementation, we also did not get sufficient training, so our services were poor to start with. I'm really concerned, and I'm sorry for taking extra time, I'm really concerned about how this has played out, especially when I, at the beginning of this program, specifically stated specific concerns regarding the level of documentation preparedness going in.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marina. Can we have a roll call vote?
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Yes.
Commissioner Brim Edwards? Commissioner Jones-Dixon? Chair Vega Peterson?
Yes, the budget modification is approved. So now, thank you so much, Antoinette and Dan. Now we're going to go circle back on C6. So, Marina, do you want to read that?
C6, budget modification HD03525, appropriate 175,000 maternal and child health community lead organizations.
Thanks. May I have a motion? Commissioner Brim Edwards moves. Commissioner Singleton seconds. Approval of R6. Welcome. So, Commissioner Brim Edwards, would you like to just restate your question for the record?
It's actually C6, right?
Did I say R6? I meant C6. Like, yes.
Did I have a question?
No, C6.
Thank you for coming. Just the nature of my question was in the explanation. It says we have an agreement. I'm sorry, I'm just going to read it because this is what didn't make sense to me. I guess I'm curious about the likelihood of this happening. We have an agreement with Oregon Health Authority to be in the planning phases for FY25. However, we may not be able to continue with the planning and implementation of Family Connects in FY26 due to budget constraints. The intergovernmental agreement may be terminated if we can no longer proceed with the planning. And then it goes on to say, like, we may not have to terminate because of a whole host of potential possibilities. So my question was around how likely are the ifs of, like, if these things happen, we can move ahead? And so that's one question. But the other question would be, if the likelihood is low, would we go ahead and do the planning, spend the money, even if we think we may not move ahead?
So
does that make sense?
Thank you for your question, Commissioner. For the record, my name is Trista Zugel. I'm the Health Department Budget Manager. So we are engaged in planning with OHA. As long as we're engaged in that planning, we will receive the money. Our next planning report goes to OHA in October. The question mark remains, at this point there's sufficient staffing in the fiscal year 2026 budget, and if that staffing remains, it's a currently vacant position, if that staffing remains, we will be able to move forward with the position and the planning.
So the staffing that's in our budget?
It is in the current fiscal year 2026 budget that is in front of you now, and if that position remains, which we won't know until adoption, then we will move forward.
Okay. Has there been any amendment to remove it?
There are no amendments to remove it.
So
it's not adopted till it's adopted, though. So.
Okay. Yeah. Then it seems fairly likely.
Yes, I mean, it's highly. It's
not very, to assume anybody's likely. Vote on the final budget, but because it just made it sound like there were more.
I understand.
There was more questions.
Yeah.
Okay. So assuming we adopt the budget with that position in it, which is currently, the positions are currently in it, mm-hmm. and they haven't been suggested for removal, then we would be able to move to the next.
Precisely, phase. Yes.
There's also a couple things that are contingent upon OHA agreeing to some programmatic adjustments. Are we fairly?
We're confident that our planning exercise is going to address those.
Okay, so this, that it seems likely that the money that we're going to use on planning will not be wasted because we're going to terminate.
Yeah, likely not certain, but likely. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
That's why we're engaged in the planning process.
Great.
And hopeful.
Thank you. That answers my question.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any other questions on this one? Okay, and we didn't have any public testimony, right, Marina?
No, Chair.
Okay, great. Can we have a vote on this one? And thank you for coming up and being available.
Commissioner Moyer?
Aye.
Commissioner Singleton?
Aye.
Commissioner Brim Edwards?
Aye.
Commissioner Jones-Dixon?
Aye.
Chair Vega Peterson?
Aye. The budget modification is approved. Great. Thank you, everyone. Now is the time we have for board comments on non-agenda items. I'm going to open it up for commissioners to see if anyone has anything to discuss today. Okay, Commissioner Singleton.
Thank you. I just wanted to share a bit of an update on the SHS, the President's Work Group at Metro. And this will be something I'll share out with everybody as well via email, but I wanted to just share a bit of an update here because we're looking at that the group's work will wrap up in June, and Metro Council will be making some decisions about whether to move forward with a ballot measure now or not. There's been some work to synthesize feedback about mission, vision, and KPIs. I have some really strong feedback on some of those that I will share out with you all so that I can, Commissioner Brim Edwards and I can hear everybody's feedback before the next meeting where this will be further discussed next Monday. So I will get that out to folks, but just wanted to give you a heads up because it is a quick turnaround that if there's particular input you have into some of this conversation, we would love to be able to carry that forward and be able to make sure we're representing all the boards. Ideas about this before the work wraps up in the next couple of weeks here. I don't know if you had anything else on that. Okay. I mentioned earlier that we had the Fern Hill Clinic opening tomorrow in Cully, so that's one of the events this week. And then just wanted to, I'm really excited about Proclamation Day because we are coming up on Juneteenth. So we will be co-sponsoring that with Commissioner Jones-Dixon. But I just wanted to give kind of a big shout out for this month because we have a number of community-based organizations and leaders and folks who are coming to celebrate with us and be a part of some of the proclamations, not just for Juneteenth, but also Immigrant Heritage Month. So I think this will be a really fun celebration, and I encourage everyone to come when and if they can. And then lastly, I just wanted to give a little bit of appreciation for everybody who's been coming out to testify at our public budget hearings. It has been really helpful to hear from community about what folks need and want, and there's not a lot of opportunity for us to talk during those. Our job is to listen, so I just wanted to give my appreciation to everybody who has shown up, whether that's been in-person, virtual, or the time it takes to write us testimony, and let us know how you're feeling about the budget and what your priorities are. Just really appreciate all that input as we're thinking about some really tough trade-offs in a challenging budget year. Thanks.
Commissioner, anyone? Commissioner Moyer.
Yeah, totally forgot that I'm having a town hall, which is next Tuesday. It is a joint town hall with City Councilor Mitch Green from 5:30 to 7:30 at the Multnomah County Library in Hillsdale. But there, please let us know. It's not a huge space. I don't expect a huge turnout, but another great opportunity to share your funding priorities and other issues that are facing our community. Thank you.
I also just wanted to share that on Sunday, it will mark the first day of Pride Month and Immigrant and Refugee Heritage Month. So as we go into June, I'd like us to keep in mind that the trans community, as well as our immigrant and refugee community members, are facing threats from all sides. As an ally, I reflect upon my privileges and my responsibility to use the influence and power that I do have to protect and fight for people's rights. With the spirit of Juneteenth in mind, I encourage that we find ways to show up for our most vulnerable folks beyond just words, but actually showing up for them, whether it's in our budget decisions or in rallies, or to make sure that we're the people in front of folks who may be harmed at different actions in the community. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any other comments or?
Yeah, just an update. Next week, we have a couple events we're going to be supported. We're going to be at the East Metro Coalition Summer Social that's hosted by the Port of Portland. So everyone, the whole board, you're welcome to join us for that. That's going to be in East County at the Fork in Fairview. And then also we're co-hosting with St. Aidan's a screening of No Place to Grow Old, which is a film that was put together by Michael Larson and company around just how homelessness is affecting our elders in the community here in the state of Oregon. And the Homeless Services Division will be a part of the panel following the screening. So everyone's welcome to come to that. That's on Tuesday of next week as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Commissioner Bray Medwards.
Were you
going to
close?
I was going to do mine, so go ahead and do yours.
Everybody else. So two things. We didn't get this in the May proclamations, but I just want to note that tomorrow is the anniversary of the Vanport flood, an event that had a huge impact on this community. So hopefully it'll be in next year's cycle of proclamations. And then the other issue, I just wanted to maybe make some comments about the budget process that we've had to date and going forward, because I want to acknowledge the doing things differently can cause discomfort. And I just want to acknowledge the discomfort that maybe a new process has the impact has had on county employees and departments. And I know this commission, when the new commission took office, we said we were going to do things differently. We were going to be
try and make our work more transparent and accountable to the public. And sometimes when that happens, it does create discomfort, and so does change. And so I just want to acknowledge that, and I don't think it's a bad thing. I hope that when we get to the end of this process, that we will have had a more effective budget process with deeper engagement from both the commission and also the public. And again, the process in the past, I think, happened very much, I felt, at least when I got here and I was explained to me how the budget process worked, at least the amendments that and the commission's engagement, that it was very much something that happened behind closed doors at the staff level. And to me, that was very uncomfortable given what was happening in our community and the interests of our community to understand like what the commission was doing in terms of getting after our biggest challenges and with the issues that the community was raising, given the county's role and the fact that the county had pretty significant resources, new resources in terms of resources that would impact issues related to homelessness, but also the fact that the county's role in terms of behavioral health issues, and then the fact that we have sort of half of the public safety budget, and that through both the sheriff's office, the DA's office, the Department of Community Justice, that we have a huge role working in partnership with the city in terms of impacting what's happening in terms of community safety, and that those discussions should really be happening in public, and that it's nothing that is adversarial to the chair, because the charter is really clear that the chair offers, proposes a budget, and then the commission has a job to do. And I'm really appreciative that all of the commissioners have taken their role as being responsive to the public, but also how can we most effectively use the resources we have. So to me, it's like this is the process actually working as it should. But I also want to recognize that it has it's different from what the status quo was, and that causes discomfort. I think some anxiety and stress within the system when we change things. And I'm hoping when we get to the other side that both the community and county staff will appreciate that a different process can get to better outcomes, but it sometimes can be messy and cause discomfort. So hopefully on June 12th, when we vote for that on the final budget, that will be the outcome.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate that, Commissioner. Just a couple things. So one, I just thank you, Commissioner Singleton, for your comments. I wanted to say we will be doing a Pride Proclamation for July based on when the parade is now held in Multnomah County in Portland. So I just wanted to make sure that folks knew that was going to be happening. I also wanted to thank everyone who joined last night for the final budget hearing and gave really, productive testimony, but also impactful testimony for us. That was our final hearing, so I wanted to make sure people still knew that they could be submitting comments to this board, as we saw people can do that during our non-agenda testimony at these board meetings. We'll have another one on Thursday morning or next Thursday morning, but you can provide written testimony online through the remainder of our budget process, and that's at multco.us/budget-feedback, multco.us/budget-feedback. That's available in many languages, and you can also just email the board clerk at multco.us through June 12th for comments as well. So lots of opportunity to get your voice heard and make sure that we are able to consider your comments as we're making these really important decisions. So thanks, everyone. That concludes today's regular board meeting. Our next meeting is our budget work session, which is scheduled next. We'll take about an 8-minute break to do that, and we'll get started again at 10:30. There being no further business, this meeting is adjourned.